thinking better and thinking together about life's most important issues. A place to finally meet in the middle, to think freely and reasonably about the big questions of life. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to another episode of Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am honored to be your host. On today's episode, like the last couple weeks, we're doing something a little bit different. So instead of doing a monologue, I'm going to do another interview. And today we have a special guest. His name is Randy Hardman. Randy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to talk. I'm excited to catch up. Randy and I attended the same seminary and lived in the same dorm for a while. Now, Randy and I didn't hang out much because, to be honest, I didn't hang out much with anyone. Not necessarily because I didn't want to, but because some of the most difficult years of my life were spent in seminary. I was living on 30 minutes of sleep a night, a bowl of oatmeal a day. I lost a ton of weight, and I was battling severe anxiety and severe OCD. So it was a difficult time in my life. And so I didn't really have a lot of time to hang out with much of anyone during that season of my life because anxiety and OCD kind of stole all my time, unfortunately. And one of the things that we'll be talking about during this interview is the problem of pain and the problem of suffering in human experience and how those events and how those experiences shape us and what we learn and what we might take from those experiences. But before we get into such a challenging topic and a difficult topic, I want to go back to the beginning of your story, Randy, to get a fuller picture of your personal journey and your walk with Christ and your journey throughout life. So tell us about your upbringing.
Yeah. So I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. So a big city. Our whole family kind of hailed from the North. So kind of always felt a bit like a transplant anyways, Northern guy, you know, personality wise, growing up in a Southern city, but big sure. metropolitan city. And, but we got shoveled off into a Southern Baptist school about 30 minutes outside of Charlotte. And so that was very kind of like, you know, very, very culturally Southern, whereas Charlotte was kind of culturally, kind of modernized a little bit. And then sure. you know, growing up with that Northern kind of mentality, always felt just different in a lot of ways. So, but I grew up in a Christian household. Parents were Christians, grandparents were Christians. So grew up going to church, going to a Southern Baptist Christian school, you know, doing the, yeah. Doing the VBS and the Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday night, you know, kind of just lived in the church. So that really, you know, I think that's a background that a lot of people can identify with. And I think it's changing now. You know, I had somebody recently ask me about, you know, where do they do Sunday evening churches? And I thought, well, I'm not sure those things happen, you know, very often anymore, but that was sure. that was my experience, growing up there. But I think probably, you know, for a lot of reasons, I felt a bit displaced, where I grew up, not just geographically, but personality wise, and always struggled in the Southern Baptist school that I went to with questions of faith and meaning and stuff like that. So I think yeah. you see people, you know, every now and then that are like, they're old souls, you know, they're asking questions earlier on in their life than most people are asking certain questions. We had some experiences in our family that kind of forced me to wrestle with some questions of you know, God and meaning and stuff like that. So even as a teenager, I was asking those kind of questions, which again, you know, when you're the one asking those kind of questions, you kind of feel at odds because everybody else kind of puts you in an odd category, and that pushes you further and further and further into being that kind of person. So,
yeah.
So, you know, I went through high school. Was kind of known as the punk rock, nonconformist kid. In fact, somebody I think several years after graduation from college, they had become an atheist, and they said, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, I was voted, kind of jokingly voted amongst our classmates, the most likely to become a pastor, and you were voted most likely to become an atheist, you know, and here you are. He was the atheist and I was going to seminary, you know. But I think for me, you know, like I graduated high school and went straight into a philosophy and religion program in my undergrad. And yeah. I went into that because I had a lot of big questions. And I thought, you know, I could go get a major in this or that, you know, technical or practical skill, but I still have a lot of questions about who I am, what the world is like, so forth. So, and then that brought me through seminary and so forth. So,
yeah. Was there a particular experience or event or several different experiences and events that kind of shaped your trajectory in terms of deciding to go to college and major in philosophy? Or was it just kind of like broadly speaking throughout your childhood, this was something that you wanted to do, you wanted to wrestle with certain questions? What kind of guided you there?
Yeah, I think I ended up having, around the age of 15 or so, something of a kind of a crisis of faith. And I think some of that, you know, a lot of people hit that at different stages. I hit that at an early stage where going to a Southern Baptist school and feeling often like an outsider, you know, I was like, I'm told all these things, but, you know, what's the foundation for these things? I don't really want to go through life saying I believe in something just because somebody's told me I believe in to believe in something. Yeah. And that was a bit rare at that age, at 15. You know, a lot of people hit that in 19, 20, 21 years old. At 15, I hit that. And so I remember actually picking up a apologetics book, Josh McDowell's New Evidence That Demands a Verdict.
Sure.
And just becoming extremely enthralled in that, because for the first time I was like, man, I'm really excited to know that there's a background to what it is that I believe. And there's, you know, whether you're talking cosmology or history or science, and my views on a lot of these things have changed over the years. But at 15, you know, picking up something that said there's actually rationality behind this, there's actually reason, there's actually history, there's good reasons to believe what you're being told, right. That was encouraging to me. And so I fell first into apologetics. I won't say that there was any particular event, but sure. I do think the growing up and feeling like an outsider kind of pushed me more in that direction.
Yeah, for sure. So tell us about your experience in college then, how your views, your ideas developed during that time.
Yeah, so becoming a 18-year-old apologist, right? You get told routinely in apologetics literature that, you know, it does create, unfortunately, a bit of an us versus them mentality, especially sure. in the popular level apologetics material. So for me, I was like, well, I'm in the mission field, you know. I know why I believe what I believe, and why would I want to go to a Christian school and just, you know, study with and think with and everybody that's like me, why not go to a secular school where I can hang out with atheist students and atheist professors and be a champion for Christ and apologetics in the secular university? So, you know, and I do think, by the way, like I had a bad enough experience in my Southern Baptist school where I just never felt like I fit in. I was always yeah. riding this tension line of kind of being, you know, on the fence, where I, you know, I listened to, you know, punk rock music growing up. I always kind of skirted the line. You know, I smoked marijuana. I hung out with the non-evangelical kids. I was kind of, again, like voted most likely to be an atheist, but I was like always struggling with, I want to believe what's true, but I also don't fall in line very well personality wise with a lot of these people that are would be within this camp, which I think is still sure. something that's true of me today. So college was really like, I get to go study with these people, but I also fit in with these people well. I fit in better with the non-religious than, you know, I do with the religious people. But I also want a mission to them. I want to evangelize to them. I also want to think through things with them and maybe be winsome, you know, for Christianity, you know, with these people. So for me, I went to Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. And while I was there, like I said, I majored in philosophy and religion with a minor in history and spent 4 years asking big questions and reading books that wouldn't be safe, according to,
sure,
you know, typical Christian reading lists. And I'm the better for it. And I've grown a bit in that way, but that was really some of my reasons for going.
Yeah, I think growing up in the church and coming from a Christian background, sometimes we're encouraged not to be exposed to certain ideas or certain viewpoints, certain authors, books. I think it's really important to expose ourselves to those kinds of things. How was that for you in terms of maybe the first time in college being exposed to worldviews or ideas that run counter to yours? And then also in terms of what was your relationship like and your interactions like with your professors or with fellow students when it came to dialogue about big questions?
Yeah, so going to college, like, I think I had become a reader, you know, before college. You know, I read a lot of apologetics literature, but that's also when I started encountering the ideas of, you know, atheists and secularists and postmodernists and so forth. So I already kind of came in with a bit of a background. You can't really go through apologetics without encountering some of those names, yeah, and some of the ideas and so forth. So, but going in there, like, there were a couple things that I really learned. And number one was, you know, ideas were a lot bigger than I had been previously given in the apologetic stuff. I think one of the dangers that Christians that are excited about apologetics and excited about, you know, the reasons why they believe is that oftentimes they hang out in silos and echo chambers and don't really, and everything that they run up against, they treat with some measure of hostility, you know. Yep. It may be a hostility with a smile on your face, but it's still like, well, I have to defend what I'm, you know, any argument that's out there, it needs to be defended or,
right,
you know, is objectionable to my faith. And I think really it took me about 3 whole years in college to start getting around to recognizing that, yes, there are a lot of thoughts and ideas that are counter Christian faith. But there are also a lot that are not, mm-hmm, and we would do well to spend more time really in a Platonic kind of sense, like as Socrates did, right? Where you spend time learning, you know. I think one of the, right, things that I regret about my college experience, going in as an apologist is that I was so ready for the fight that, mm-hmm, I didn't really have a good tool belt on me. I thought more than I knew more than I did. Sure. And I was egotistical and prideful, and you see that a lot with young budding apologists. I think that's,
yes,
really unfortunate that our apologetics leaders and pastors and theologians tell, you know, 18-year-olds that, you know, to go and fighting the non-believers. And I think that you can say, hey, listen, you're supposed to be a witness. You need to be ready for ideas that are not your own or are counter to Christianity, but also be willing to recognize where a good idea is a good idea or where it may integrate with faith or so forth. So I think for me, I mean, talking about deconstruction now, a lot of deconstruction started to happen in college, where a lot of the things that I came in with, specifically things like inerrancy of scripture or evolutionary, sure, theory, started to really break down once I started to put myself in a position of being open to how would this work if it was integrated into my Christian faith.
Yeah, that's really good. In apologetics in apologetic circles. Sometimes I see a lack of empathy, a lack of openness. And then sometimes when we come in contact with a different viewpoint, we get really defensive and get on the attack instead of looking for common ground and looking to build bridges. We often skip that point and just try and like defend or counter an argument.
Right.
But there is so much that like we hold in common. There is so much common ground, and there are so many areas or avenues to build bridges with others who may not think exactly the way that we do. Yeah. So I think what you're saying is 100% correct. And I totally agree. And I had a similar experience too, I think, going to seminary, where I came in contact with a lot of different viewpoints. And you do kind of go through this process, I think, of becoming a little bit more open, a little bit more empathetic, and certainly of understanding where other people are coming from. And I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. I mean, there were two important, I'll just kind of briefly share two little stories that this really came home to me. One was, and we could talk about Rashiocracy at some point, but I started an apologetics ministry on campus, and I was in the midst, I think in my late junior year, maybe my early senior year, of taking a big world religions class. And it's just one of those classes I had to take for my philosophy degree. And, you know, I was in this class along with several of the other individuals that were part of Rashiocracy. And again, we were like on fire for, you know, defending Christianity in the secular classroom and stuff like that. But one of the classes, the professor made a statement, and then later on in the day, one of our members emailed the entire class with kind of an invitation to join Rashiocracy so that we could talk about the demonic ideas, the satanic ideas and influence that this professor was espousing during the class that day. And I remember the professor, you know, emailed this person, and they came back to me and they were like, oh my gosh, I think I've made a mistake. You know, yeah. We went to go visit this professor, and he was in tears over the whole thing.
Oh man.
Felt extremely embarrassed, very, very opposed by two students in his classroom. And at the end of the day, I don't think his ideas were correct, but I don't think, you know, the ways that we labeled them, the ways that we treated him, you know, the ways that it was like, well, there's nothing else that matters other than defending the Christian faith in this kind of context. I mean, we lost this guy, right? And we became, I don't think just for this professor, but for many of the students in the class, it was like, oh gosh, you know, there's the Christians again. There's the Christian apologists again. You know, we can kind of become like people that stand on the streets and yelling at people, you know, about how they should be wearing pants and, you know, they're all going to hell, stuff like that. It's like, you kind of just become an annoyance for people. And,
yeah.
And again, it's just kind of a bit of an ego thing. The other thing, when I was getting ready to attend seminary, we had somebody that contacted me and said, oh, I hear you're going up to that school. Why don't you go to this other school? And I said, well, I think my ideas are evolving on these issues, particularly that of inerrancy and evolution. Sure. And I remember this person responding in the email to me, oh, but that's a school with a bunch of atheists and agnostic professors, you know? And I remember thinking, Asbury? Like, Asbury Seminary is a bunch of atheist professors in disguise, you know? And I think for me, that's just when I was like, my shift in how apologetics is appropriate started to really shift. In fact, at a certain point, I exited Rashiocracy, which I helped found. And, you know, my views towards apologetics have changed radically over the years. I'm still a nonconformist. I still love ideas, still love philosophy and culture, and think Christianity's got good reasons behind it. But I think one of the things that just happens for a lot of people with apologetics is that they become, you know, so frustrated by the ways that we go about it and by our presuppositions and by our own arrogance that it's not winsome. You know, it pushes people away. Yep. And I think you even see that right now with this deconstruction stuff, is oftentimes for deconstructionists, it's really not about the evidence behind Christianity. It's about their experience with it. You know,
yes,
you can give them all the evidence at the end of the day and argue till you're blue in the face about it. But at the end of the day, I think for most people going through deconstruction, it's about their experiences.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. The issue of hypocrisy is definitely a big one. It's always been an issue in the church. I think it will always be an issue in the church. We'll get more into the issue of deconstruction as we move along in our conversation. I wanted to ask you about Summit Ministries, because there's a ministry here in I live in Colorado Springs, and there's a ministry here in Manitou, which is right next to Colorado Springs. It's an apologetic ministry called Summit Ministries, and I wanted to hear from you your experience there, and I think it will kind of overlap with some of the things that we've been talking about already.
Yeah. So I actually attended Summit in 2006, I believe, as a student in Bryan College, Tennessee, or Bryan College, which was in Dayton, Tennessee. And Dayton, Tennessee, by the way, is the town that's famous for the Scopes Monkey Trial. So things like evolution, right? And Rachel Held Evans, she lived there. She actually had worked for Summit during some of that time, or a couple years prior to me. But it was a big cultural apologetics, you know, little school in this town. And I worked for them from 2007 to 2011. And what I really liked about Summit was, during the years that I worked there, was that they really did have a good focus on worldview.
Yeah.
And so apologetics may be an aspect of that worldview, but worldview is much broader than reasons to believe what you believe.
Sure.
It's about how you worship. It's about how you relate to others. It's about, you know, things like your family and marriage and, you know, just a whole litany of things. I mean, I would say that, you know, even through seminary, right, for you and me going through Asbury Seminary, you know, we can silo these things out in terms of, you know, you can get a master's in apologetics, or you can get a master's in theology, or you can get a master's in, you know, preaching, or master's in divinity. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all asking the question, how should we see the world in a way that's an accurate representation of the world? And apologetics can do that to some degree, but I also think it, you know, if it's teaching you to see people as the enemy, right, or teaching you, you know, you to see yourself as superior, right, this is the ego trip or whatever,
right,
or teaching you to see things like in a matrixy kind of fashion where everything is data, and emotions and feelings and experiences are all secondary or tertiary to that, then it's actually not a good biblical worldview. A biblical worldview is holistic. It's going to touch everything from, you know, from child rearing to your marriage to, you know, how you actually live next to your neighbors to how you take care of your own yard to, you know, I mean, it's just everything, how you contribute to your local community, you know, your views on different social justice things, so forth. So I think for Summit, my experience with them from 2007 to 2011 was a very positive experience. Everybody has different experiences. And I think our world is constantly changing. So, you know, I won't say my experience was this. I know people that have had fabulous experiences and not so good experiences in any world of apologetics, but Summit for me was a good time.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. I wanted to circle back on something funny, because you mentioned you went to App State, Appalachian State, and I'm a diehard Michigan fan, Randy. And I think it was my first year in college. I went to college at a small school in Texas, like outside of Dallas. That first year, Michigan had a great team, and I think they were rated like top five, maybe. And that was the year that we lost to Appalachian State. And I remember I couldn't get access to it because I was in Texas. So I couldn't like get the game on. So I was watching it on one of those like ESPN Gamecast feeds. And I was like living and dying with like every little report on this ESPN Gamecast. And I thought Michigan actually won because it took a long time to upload. But that was obviously a devastating loss. What were you doing on that Saturday?
Oh, the funny thing was, I remember on that Thursday or Friday, it might have been a Thursday, that that game happened. I was in a theater 101 class, and some students came in, and they said, there's a bus outside. Anybody that wants to go to this game, like, there's some seats left. So, you know, like, we'll be back in a couple days, but, you know, no toothbrush or whatever. You can buy all your stuff when you get up there. But come on, like, seats are free, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I remember thinking, you know what? I'd rather be there than theater class, but I'm not sure that I want to see ourselves get stomped all over and waste away my weekend. So I actually, you know, just stayed put and then went to Charlotte for that weekend and then turned on the game afterwards, and we had won. And I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, I could have... I could have been there. I got an invitation to go there, and I did not. So, but I still wear the apparel sometimes. We still have Boone versus Michigan, App State versus Michigan shirt that I wear sometimes just to upset Michigan people.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we'll never live that down, like ever.
Never, never. 200 years, people will still be talking about it.
Yes, you're right. All right, so we talked a little bit about ATS, Asbury Theological Seminary, the school we both went to. Tell me a little bit about your experience there, what you learned, positive experiences, negative. Tell us about your experience.
Yeah, again, my experience, just like with Appalachian and just with Summit, was, you know, it was a positive experience at seminary. I went in with a passion to wrestle with ideas and thoughts and develop, you know, theology. And I think for me, one of the reasons why it was a good experience was because I had gone through, especially in my senior year of App State, a lot of, again, what we might call deconstruction, but, you know, I might also just call liberation or wrestling with ideas, where by the time I had come to Asbury, I had worked out a lot of the things that would have otherwise bothered me. Because I think, like, again, you know, the person who is like, well, you're going to a school with a bunch of, you know, atheists that are, you know, in a closet, you know, because they write on the, some of them are accepting of evolution, or, you know, they don't have a statement of inerrancy, you know, a lot of people found that trouble, and I would have years before I would have found that troubling.
Sure.
So I know people that have gone through this school and they get into these classes, and it is a big wrestling match. You know, I'm sure you've done it. I did it, you know, talking with people late into the night about how this particular thing that we learned about in class isn't you know, the devil, right? It's not Satan. It's not the world. It's not, these are just ideas. And our goal is to ask the question, you know, do they integrate well? Number one, are they true? Number two, if they are true, how do they integrate with the Christian faith? You know? Now I focused on biblical studies, and that was my passion, through my philosophy and religion degree at App State. So I was trained in history. I came here with a lot of that background, so I had already, you know, come in with a lot of that kind of stuff that a lot of people, you know, just, they start getting here. So I was a bit, you know, several years ahead in that sense, but it was a great time of really spending, you know, dedicated time pouring through scripture, asking hard questions, and just wrestling with it, and I still do to this day, you know. I don't work in New Testament scholarship anymore, but I can say I don't think if I didn't have that experience, I'm not sure that I would be the kind of person that I am today.
Sure.
Now, that said, there's still experiences that you face, you know, and I did face some of those through seminary and some of those after seminary that really called to question, certain things that you might learn in a classroom or you might wrestle with. So, you know, I'm not static by any means. I've grown, right. I've grown and changed a lot, you know, in the, you know, now what is it, 8 years, you know, since seminary graduation.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Which is crazy. But I think for me, seminary was a great period of learning how to think and do so in an environment where I felt the professors and those that I surrounded myself with were champions of that, you know. Good conversations all around. And I will say this, I later did a master's of social work, and I remember thinking, does anybody in this cohort stay up late into the evenings talking about the ideas that were, you know, a part of the social work curriculum? Nobody does. Yeah. Everybody's just like, you know, clock in, clock out of class, go to your internship. This is about getting a job. For us going through seminary, for so many of us, it's like you spend all day in the classroom, you spend all evening writing your papers, and then you spend wee into the hours of the morning talking with each other and trying to wrestle this out. And I think that's very rare. It just really is a good, unique experience.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. My experience, probably a couple things I could say is, you know, one, I was exposed to a lot of new ideas, which in the end is super beneficial. Now, at the time, that exposure to different ideas and new ideas can be difficult. Because I think all of us, well, I can only speak for myself, I guess. I don't like change. And so the idea of changing my beliefs or changing my viewpoints, that can be scary. It can also be connected to a kind of fear of like a domino effect. Like, well, if I change this belief, then I have to change this belief. And now I have to change this. And so that can be a scary proposition.
Sure.
But I think in the end, it is worthwhile because at some point in your life, you are going to be exposed to those ideas. And it does take energy. It does take courage to wrestle through those things, but you will be better for it. And so my experience, though, I think I faced some trepidation, some stress wrestling through that stuff, like in the end, it was more than worthwhile, and I'm so thankful that I did. The other thing I was going to say about seminary is I think just my experience with OCD, it was at its worst then. And so I kind of lament the fact that I lacked some of the social aspects that you're talking about. I didn't have a ton of experience being able to talk with others and think through things with my peers because I was so OCD, it robs all your time. And so I was just kind of stuck in my room all day studying and being obsessive about it, which is not a good thing. But again, even that experience I can look back on and say, well, I learned a ton in the midst of that struggle about myself, about God. And those are things that I will take with me for the rest of my life and things that I think I still reflect on almost daily. This episode and all episodes of Thinkersensitive are available on thinkersensitive.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app today to listen to more thought-provoking content from Thinkersensitive.